Third hour, Robbie and Rexrode starting up here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rexrode, the great Mark Howard, in for Robbie Stanley, Ryan Porth producing, and we're very excited to welcome our next guest, as we have every Friday at 8 a.m., our good friend, TD, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation, Titans reporter, film breaker down extraordinaire, and of course, talking with TD Podcast. TD, how you doing?
Hey, I'm blessed, man. I woke up, got to listen to Wake Up Everybody by Teddy Pendergrass, and I'm feeling good.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, man. We don't talk enough about Teddy P on this show.
That's right.
Good stuff.
That's right.
And TD also, by the way, the proud father of a very recent graduate of Howard University. So congrats again on that. Hope it's been a great week for you and your family. And TD, as we've talked a little bit this week on the show about the tight end position. I know we've talked some with you, but I'm reminded of it because a week ago I made the Zach Ertz prediction. So as you look at him specifically, how do you think that might work out for the Titans? Do you think that is something is that a pie in the sky thing, like some of these other things we talk about with players who may be available or trades that may be swung? Or do you think that's actually something that could be feasible and helpful for this team?
Yeah, I think that is something that's feasible and could be helpful for this team. And for me, when I look at it, I'm not looking at it from a trade perspective. I think that train has kind of left the station. But you got this June 1st free agency period that's going to start. We have these veteran guys getting released. And I could see the Eagles releasing Zach Ertz. In my opinion, they tried to find a trade partner. They tried to find a place that would be good for him and also good for them. That's what Howie Roseman said at the press conference. So I don't think it obviously wasn't able to happen, but I think he could be released. The $12 million cap number is going to be a lot, so if they could spread that out over the next couple seasons with that post-June 1st release, I think that's something that they will do.
I mean, when you look at those two positions, you know, tight end and receiver, I think, you know, a lot of fans look at those like, okay, are those rooms complete right now? Is there going to be some kind of significant change? How would you rate the importance of both of them in terms of the Titans adding to them right now, receiver versus tight end?
Yeah, I think they need to add to both of those. And for me, when I look, it's more tight end to me because, you know, God forbid somebody gets hurt. If Ferguson gets hurt, what's left? You know what I mean? I'm curious what's going to happen with Jarrett Pinkney. I want to see how he could come and if he could show, some sign of fulfillment of that promise he showed at Vanderbilt. So that's something. But I could see them. I could see them taking care of both of those needs because it's still there, and they obviously, you know, feel different about the slot position than I do, right? But it depends on what type of slot you want. I don't think that they have that shifty, quick guy like Adam Humphries was, and I think that's something that they still need to address. And you look at that, right? That could be a guy like Jameson Crowder if he gets released. It's a crowded room up there in New York, you know, with the Jets, their receiver group.
Speaking of Teron Davenport, of course, the great Titans beat writer for ESPN.com and ESPN, and TD, first of all, immensely enjoyed doing draft coverage with you the first two nights. But I got to ask you, between then and now, how much better do you feel about Caleb Farley, their number one draft pick, and maybe the additional information you've gotten about his physical condition?
That, Mark, is an awesome question, and I'm glad you asked me that because me personally, I think the situation is a lot less extreme than I thought it was. And you were always in that boat where, hey, I mean, you said it. You said that it's a very good possibility. So I give you props for that. You called it. And for me, you know, after talking to Caleb Farley, he told me about, you know, one, his faith. I think that's a huge thing, but then he said he felt good. And, the Titans brass, their doctors, they got their hands on him. I think it's a situation where I didn't know the extent of involvement they had, and I didn't know the full perspective as far as the injuries concerned. Stefania Bell came on, and she pointed to Rob Gronkowski and how at an older age he was able to overcome that. So, you know, it's a good situation for them. He apparently is ready to go. You see his tweets, his Instagram, his social media. You hear what he said to me on Talking with TD. He's ready to go. But I do like the perspective that he had, and that he feels like, even though he feels good, he has to understand that there's protocol and things to follow.
What do you think happened internally when the whole Rashad Weaver story unfolded? Do you think that this organization maybe changes the way it does its due diligence, or was this just an honest oversight on their part?
Yeah, I think it was an oversight, but I definitely feel that they need to change the way they do their due diligence. And this is something that I asked them about before the draft, you know, with the Isaiah Wilson situation. Is that changing how you're doing things? And, you know, they did their best, apparently, you know, used a lot of the five interviews, the virtuals that they were allotted for prospects. I'm not so sure how something like this could slip through the cracks. But then at the same time, you have to provide balance, right? Because, you know, I've heard from a few sources that there isn't any way anybody would have known about that. But my question to that is, well, if there's a police report, how does that slip through the cracks? You know, so there's just a lot of back and forth. Other teams apparently knew about that. You know, Paul Kaharsky did a great job of reporting that. And it's something that they have to fix. You can't have these things happen over and over again. And, you know, even if there is a guy who has somewhat questionable character, you have to be very careful, because it is back-to-back years where it's happened.
TD, of these, we're going to be out there tomorrow, actually, right? Yeah, we're going to be out there tomorrow. Get a chance.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's I'm excited, but I know you are excited. Actually, get out on the grass and watch some football, rookie mini camp. One, I guess, what's the number one thing you're looking forward to seeing? But then I would also follow that up with, of these rookies, and, of course, the Titans just signed five of them. Looks like it's going to be haggle-free on the way to getting them all signed. Which of these guys do you think will be the most impactful in 21?
You know, I will say I'm most looking forward to seeing Caleb Farley get on the field if he does. That's what I'm most excited about seeing, just because of so much suspense, so many questions about whether or not he'll be able to do it. But at the same time, I can't wait to see Elijah Molden out there. You know, I want to see what they're, how much they're moving him around and what they're asking him to do. And obviously, you know, it's not going to be a regular practice, so you can only see so much. But I want to see how comfortable he is grasping that scheme and just moving around and getting out there. Those would be the two things. As far as impact, well, it's tough not to say Caleb Farley after talking to him, right? It's tough, but it's obvious to say the first round pick. So I'm going to shift it, and I'm going to go Molden. I think he's going to have the biggest impact. And I just love the versatility that he has. You could use him as a nickel. You know, you could use him outside at times. You could drop him back single high. He could play, you know, two post safety. Whatever you want him to do within that secondary, he could do it. And he could play against the run. He could, you know, jump the underneath routes and those type of things. So I think he will have the biggest impact.
TD, it sometimes surprises me that in a field goal league like the NFL, and the amount of time that they, you know, scrutinize talent at every position, that it seems like teams are pretty casual when it comes to their place kicker. Who's going to be that guy for the Titans this year? They signed, I guess, as an undrafted free agent, the kicker from Ohio State.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being the kicker, but the concern there that you have to have is, okay, what happens when you need 50 yarders, right? Because the old man, Goskowski, last year he was drilling those 50 yards, but when you get inside the 50, that's where there was an issue. But there's going to be times, you know, and that's one of the things I always loved about the Ravens, you know, with Justin Tucker. It's a cheat code, right? Because it's almost like if they get to the 40-yard line, the opponent's 40-yard line, they are almost guaranteed 3 points. And that's always a good advantage to have. So I think you do have to address the kicker position. But I believe it's going to be the guy that they drafted out of Ohio State.
So, I mean, basically him versus McCann?
Signed out of Ohio State. So, yeah, I think it's going to be him versus McCann.
Yeah, I don't, man, that's just.
They got to go cheap
this comforting.
Year.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. It's not comforting. So you don't think there's any chance late here in camp it's like, okay, Steven, let's go?
Oh, there's a chance. I think that's kind of like their you know, it's like playing Uno, right? You know, that's your draw four card. You know, you want to pull that out of there. I think that's what they have.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, yeah, it is not a little bit unsettling for sure. TD, thanks for being on the show. Great having you, and look forward to seeing you out there tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate it. And I apologize, man. The birds in the background are trying to talk more than me. So I apologize about that background noise.
All good.
Yeah, I didn't even hear it, but that's my ears, I guess. All right, Teron Davenport, good to have you. Thanks, TD. And we will be back on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, Friday edition. And thanks to Teron Davenport, last segment presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com. Some interesting stuff from TD there, Mark. And kind of on the Zach Ertz train that I'm on too, maybe a little bit. I think we've talked about this, and you agree with him on the slot, and I can see that too. I think there's a real case to be made for a bona fide slot guy, and that's his role. I think that's why they signed Humphreys. They didn't get their money's worth from Humphreys, but when he played, you could see why they signed him, right? I guess could Cam Batson be that?
I think the two burning questions on offense, the answers are not on the roster yet. I think the element that not a lot of people are taking into consideration that TD referred to, and by the way, if you're a Titans fan, TD is always a good read. He is meticulous in his preparation. I mean, he's really an amazing guy to be around. We had a really good time for the draft parties. But all that aside,
laughing at Jared together.
Well, yeah, that too. I agree with him that there are going to be a lot of really good players cut June 1st. And I think the Titans can maybe rectify some oversights in the draft or gaps that they weren't able to fill or spots they weren't able to fill by veterans. I love the Zach Ertz thought. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously Dallas Goedert has supplanted him. He's had injuries. He's getting older. There is a risk there. For sure, and cost is a huge part of the equation. I mean, there's a lot of guys around that June 1st time period that they're going to get paid a lot less.
But I think that everything seems to be relative as you go year to year, and I think there are a lot of players, and we saw it in the NHL, a lot of players taking 1 year below market salaries because they understood that the cap was going to be down. And I think a lot of guys understand that they're just not going to get paid this year, but they'll still want to play. So, I think, Joe, it's the new normal, and guys will just adjust.
Yeah. I think he's an option. Another guy who intrigues me out there and has just fallen back a little bit and has not been nearly what I thought he'd be in the NFL is O.J. Howard in Tampa Bay. Certainly Cameron Brate. Cameron Brate's one of those guys. No one ever talked about him last year, but, man, did he make some big plays for that team.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know Gronk. By the way, interesting point there, TD talking about Caleb Farley and the Gronk comparison. But O.J. Howard, they've picked up his option. I don't know how that works out. Obviously, you also think naturally about the idea of, John Robinson and his former boss making a trade, having a dealing together. He is someone who I feel like has more to give in this league and maybe could in a different place work out. I don't know if that can be made to work. What do you think about in the slot situation? What do you think about a guy who's very well known locally in Golden Tate? That's pretty much my reaction too.
I just didn't like what happened to him with the Giants, and you know that's just my opinion. I don't see him as an every down guy. I just don't see that anymore for him. I don't know. Other than coming home, I don't know if it's a great fit. And the, you know, the other thing about this too, Joe, is that if you're John Robinson, and especially this year, I think the level of talent that's going to be out there in the open market will mitigate any thoughts you have of spending draft capital. I really believe that. I don't know unless you're just absolutely in love with the player and you feel he's a perfect fit. I don't think you want to spend a draft pick on him because there could be something pretty similar to him out in the open market.
Well, and the thing is, too, I mean, with this draft, obviously the last two drafts, there have been limitations. Everybody expects that in 22, the limitations are going to be over, right? Everybody's going to be going to games again this fall, hopefully, and having the full combine. So for people who have been hurt by those limitations, and I think it's fair to say the Titans are in that group, you know, that next draft seems like one that you want to hold on to your stuff for, right? The question with, again, with an Ertz or some of these guys out there is for the Titans and a lot of teams, you know, what's the cost? Can you make it work? There's always the question. I mean, I know the answer is always like, well, just restructure something. Restructure this deal. Restructure that deal. Find more money. It does seem like some teams manage to do it. I don't know how the Saints or the Chiefs have pulled off some of what they've done, but you have to take that into account. Another popular one that I am not big on, but I'd like to get your opinion, is the idea of Delanie Walker.
No. That ship has sailed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know why everybody thinks tight end. You know, Tim Tebow. Come on. And Delanie Walker, with all due respect, got pretty banged up at the end of his career. Maybe he can, you know, give somebody a year, but I just don't see it.
Well, and look, I'm sure he's in great shape. I'm sure, you know, if you're on Insta, there's probably like a Delanie Walker workout or something. I'm sure, you know, but he hasn't been the Delanie Walker who was a great player here really since 2017.
Exactly.
So
I haven't seen his workout. It's would be presumptuous for me to just dismiss him out of hand. But that whole notion of, you know, I always remember you know, when I was at the other place and we would interview NFL players and they would, you know, talk, you know, working with Frank Wycheck, and they'd always tell Wycheck, "How you feeling, Frank?" He goes, "Oh, I feel great." He goes, "Yeah, you do, but you can't play anymore." And that is normally the case with most players.
Yeah. Now, you know, someone could look at Ertz and say, "Well, the guy's 30. He's seen his best days." I mean, but 30 and 38, right?
That's a huge difference.
He's had injuries. I just feel like, you know, there's more to give there, and he may be just the perfect, you know, high ankle sprain. That's a bad injury, and especially as you get older, that's a long term thing. He missed most of last season, you know, and obviously he's had other limitations. But I feel like he's one of those perfect guys where in this exact environment, you actually are going to have a year of him for way less than he should be making.
Exactly, and Ertz for a year is a pretty nice stopgap. And you draft a tight end next year.
Because to TD's point, I mean, you know, you lose Firkser, who to me still is, he's more of a specialist to me than an all-around tight end, and you lose him. What are you looking at? Jeff Swaim's a nice, you know, nice guy to have in the room, but that's your top line. Maybe a Pinckney can do something. I liked Pinckney at Vanderbilt, but the indications aren't great.
Yeah,
right?
He hasn't shown us he can play in the league. You know, maybe bringing Michael Pruitt back.
To me,
he's a solid guy, but again, not an every down tight end.
They did sign two. Of course, the Titans made official 10 guys they signed yesterday. Four of interest. One of them is, we mentioned, the Ohio State kicker. I'm just going to mess up his name. So the Ohio State kicker. Michigan State defensive tackle Naquan Jones, I think, is a guy who would have a shot. But the two tight ends. And actually, somebody texted in yesterday on this. On the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Miller Forrestall. I mean, look, anybody who plays at Alabama, you're just like, okay, so he's probably good, right? He's probably an NFL player. So Forrestall, but actually the kid from Kansas State, Briley Moore, I thought he was going to get drafted, and I thought he maybe was an option late, you know, in that sixth round for the Titans. They sign him. He was very productive. He's got the right measurables, was productive. Maybe one of those three, Pinckney, Forrestall, Moore could be part of the answer.
Well, but usually it takes 2 or 3 years to develop these guys. It takes a couple of years on the practice squad, back of the roster, you know, playing a preseason game or two. The Titans need a Zach Ertz type who they can plug in and really know what they're getting. They're not going to start an undrafted free agent in week one.
No.
I don't care how promising they are. But in terms of down the road, you know, absolutely.
Well, I mean, think about Jonnu Smith, who, listen, I'm bullish on Jonnu Smith. I think that's the one guy who got away who I think it's going to be a regret around here. We'll see. I think he's special. But look at him early in his career. And I know Delanie Walker was there, but it took him time to even get, you know, consistent reps. So, I agree. You've got to find someone proven and add to that room. That's a necessity. We're going to get a break now. When we come back, we're going to get back into the Preds with another venerable legend, Terry Crisp. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Robbie and Rex Road. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Joe Rex Road. Mark Howard in for Robbie Stanley. Ryan Porth producing. And got some real nice comments on the text line today. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, people very much enjoying Mark on the show today. And they're going to enjoy our next guest as well. As always, every Friday at 8:30, the legendary Terry Crisp. Crispy, how are you?
I am great, guys. And what's not to enjoy about Mark Howard? I mean, I took him under my wing. I counseled him. I mentored him. I taught him all I know.
Fed me jelly beans.
Yeah, I forgot about the jelly beans. Good to hear you again, buddy.
Well, great to talk to you, Crispy.
Let's hear the jelly bean story. I don't know this story.
Well, Crispy, do you still do it during the games? Consumes a bag of jelly beans, and you always pass them off to me.
I used to, but you know what happened? Somebody squealed on me and told my wife, and that came to an abrupt halt. The source was cut off. It's like long lines at the gas lines today, whatnot. Jelly beans.
Well, Sheila Crisp runs that show, so
no argument here, Mark.
So, all right. Well, I got to follow up on this. Black jelly beans, yes or no?
Which was it?
Black jelly beans, yes or no?
No.
Oh,
a big yes for me.
Big yes. Big yes. Big yes. Absolutely. For me. Black licorice, big time. All right. Transitioning to hockey, Crispy. Big series coming up. We finally know it starts Monday. Do you take anything from the past two games? Do you feel like the Preds gained confidence, sent a message, did anything to help themselves in this series, even though we know everything starts over Monday?
Hell yeah, they sure did. I mean, they've been fighting and scrambling and scrapping all along since, what, March the 15th, I think, when we turned it around with a win against Tampa Bay, I believe it was at that given time, one of the big boys. And they scrambled and scratched every time. And why would they quit in the last two games before entering playoffs? They made it. They feel good about themselves. They've earned the right to be here. Let's say that. Like, I don't want to hear anybody ever tell me again of worry about, well, they're lucky to be here. No, they're not lucky. They come down the stretch flying. We had goaltending, the guys dug in, the kids from the minors, just unbelievable value to our hockey club. And this deal about poo-poo in the last game, that's BS, is that it? Because both teams have pride. Both teams and both coaches know. And I listened to Rod Brind'Amour afterwards, and he didn't poo-poo the game, I'll tell you. He said, yeah, he arrested a couple guys, or he used some guys with bumps and bruises and took them out like we did. But he said, we realized and saw that this team is dangerous. This team can come to play against you every night. So he said, no, we didn't take it lightly. He said, we're going to work over some things we saw in that last game we didn't like, that the Preds did to us. So he also realizes that they're a scrappy team now.
Crispy, you know this better than anybody, the dynamic between a player and its coach and coaching staff. I wouldn't have said this a year ago when they went in against Arizona and lost the series. But I would say going in, I don't know how they're going to do, but John Hines seems to have everybody bought in, you know, to his system and his style, and the guys seem to have responded.
Absolutely, Mark. You hit the nail right on the head with that one, I'll tell you. And we've been talking about the last little bit about watching how they've come together and how the players are talking in their interviews and whatnot. And it's totally turned around as to when John Hines came here. Remember when he came here in the midseason, it was sort of disarray. Not disarray, but we weren't clicking. And then we had that bubble deal going into the playoffs, play-ins, and whatever. Then a 10-game training camp with this team. And the 10-game training camp to me is like, it's not bad if you have your team. But what do you have, 6 or 7 new players that David Poile had gone out and got for them to bring to our club? 6 new faces that hadn't played here before. And then we had a couple injuries, but then we brought the kids up from the minors who were a great addition. Let me just start with that. And you had to put them into the lineup and figure out and then get the system and then get the players. And then new coaching staff, not totally new, but he brought in Dan Hinote and Todd Richardson and those guys, Richards. And those guys, you know, Dan Lambert and them, they did a job. They had to get together also and come together and fix a power play and a penalty kill, et cetera, and so forth. So it wasn't a smooth road coming down this season. And yet, look it. These guys just took it by the handle and made the playoffs. So I'm giving the coaching staff full marks for what they did.
When you see the first 6 games between the Predators and Hurricanes, Nashville had a hard time handling Carolina's speed and pressure. What's going to be the key to doing that beginning on Monday in Raleigh?
Probably the biggest thing is don't stand around the ice and asking them for autographs. Don't say, oh, there's this guy. Oh, could I have your autograph? My foot. We're going to go head-to-head with them. And that's why we win. We were aggressive. I mean, the herd line started all out. Then the guys bought in. Then Cunning started to hit and on down the line. And we brought in Harper, who he was tagging guys out there. And this team is a good team. But you know where they're solid? They're goaltending, defense, offense, the whole deal. But I really like their defense corps. If you go over their defense corps, they're big, big men. Like, they're all over 6 feet, and they all like to hit. But what happened was we met them head-on in the physical department, and I think that's where we turned it all around when everybody bought into it. And by that, I mean our team actually, and Mark, you sat beside me long enough to know that I love the phrase rat-pack tough. Mm-hmm. And rat-pack tough means I don't care. If a scrum breaks out on the ice, I want to see 5 gold jerseys, and each guy has a man so that nobody's left alone in the cavern with guys surrounding him. That's what I saw in the last half of the season. And I don't care who it is, whether it's good Branson or whether it's Olivier or whether it's Arvidsson and Grimaldi or from one side to the other. When something breaks out, you go nose to nose and toes to toes with somebody on the ice so that you're never outnumbered. That's what I like coming down the stretch with this team.
So, Crispy, we had John Hines on earlier, and you know he was talking about the lineup, of course, the young guys, the hunger, the standard that was set, but also you know some of the difficult choices for this series. And Elli Tolvanen, one of those guys who came up as a guy who was hurt, has not been as effective since coming back, obviously is critical on that power play. What do you think? First of all, would you relish being in this spot in terms of having so many different combinations and so many guys who are going to sit right now who could make a case to be in your lineup? And what do you think right now specifically about Tolvanen and how he fits in?
Heck yeah, I'd relish it. I should have relished that and said, holy hell, who do I have to play that? Where am I going to play that? What a, of course, I'd put relish on top of ketchup and mustard to get that one, I'll tell you right now, for these guys. And Tolvanen is, he's still a youngster. He still is not, like, I mean, we saw spurts of him. Remember when he first struggled coming in, Mark, you and I, we talked about the youngster, but they put him on a plateau where he maybe shouldn't have been earlier. He went down, he learned, he's coming. Yeah, we know he has the skill. We know he has the shot. And I think right now, if a couple of veterans just get alongside of him and talk with him, he'll be a valuable asset. But the depth of our team right now is what has carried us. Look at the injuries we had, the quote, core guys that were out. And we won. And who won? The guys we plugged in with, the guys we brought up from Chicago, a.k.a. Milwaukee. These kids did the job. Tolvanen is part of that. And I've been through what Coach Hines has gone through. Let me tell you, with the goaltending, with Saros and Rene, and you love them both, and Pekka Rene is an icon here, and this should be the first jersey ever go up in the rafters in this building if I had a vote on it. But you coaches go through these, but they're things that you have, you welcome the thing, and we have two great goaltenders. Now we have youngsters we can plug in. Like, look at when Janot came up. We didn't know Janot. We said, oh, Olivier's down. Huh, you know, just stepped in and took off like a cannon. He's in the lineup now. You got Trennan, Janot, Olivier. These guys have earned their right. You know what, as a coach, it's tough, but that's your job. Your job is to make hard decisions. And every night, and I can remember when I was in Calgary and had a good team. I mean, Cliff Fletcher built a good team. And I had three players every game I had to sit out that could be in my lineup easily. But you have to make the choice. You can only dress 18. And you hope that the guys understand. You have meetings, personal meetings. You talk with them all. But it's still not easy. It's not an easy job to walk in before a game and tell three players you're not dressing tonight. You're not, and, you know, the players see you coming. And they say, oh, here comes that BBB again. And I know what he's going to say to me. that's not easy, guys. But it's a coach's job. And I keep telling everybody, people in that... why did they play him? And why did this guy dress over him? And why? Well, I said, you know what? And I told this to Mark Howard Mason. We as coaches, you know what we do? The first thing we do, we sit down and we have a meeting as coaches all together before the game. And we sit down and say, well, guys, what lineup can we put together tonight to lose this hockey game? You know, we want to lose this game, so let's put a lineup together tonight that's going to lose it. I mean, it sounds stupid, right? But that's what people think. No. You put a lineup every night, and some nights you run with the same lineup. Some nights you take two guys out, sometimes one. But that's what you, when you hired on, that's a coach's job.
Crispy, you've seen him up, you've seen him down. Do you think UC Saros is ready to steal a series?
Yes, he could easily do that. But I also know that Saros, in his mind, and the rest of the team know that they have a backup at Pekka Rinne. I don't like to use the word backup. They have a goalie that can step in, has been through the wars, and can win games, which he's proven over. And I know that Coach Hines and his staff must feel comfortable in the goaltending they have right now. They have to. Because I'm being honest, from March the 13th or 15th on, I mean, Saros stepped in there, and he played unbelievable. And the team played unbelievable in front of him. And when Pekka Rinne was there, when Saros was out, he did the same thing for the stint when he was in. So feeling comfortable about our goaltending, yeah, that's the one area I'm not worried about.
Terry Crisp, Predators TV analyst, has been our guest. Crispy, great stuff as always. Appreciate it. Enjoy the hockey. Lay off the jelly beans.
Okay, I'm off the jelly beans. I'll enjoy the hockey. But what I want to do say is, guys, for you is, hey, we think it's great and it is super to have our fans back in the building. We've been waiting all year for this. And what better time, Mark, than for the playoffs to fill up the building. And that ovation they gave Pekka the other night, Mark, you know I'm an old softy, but that even brought tears to my eyes.
Me too,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for talking, guys. Playoff, go Preds, and we'll see you all at the rink.
All right, Crispy.
Terry Crisp, Predators TV analyst, been our guest. We'll be back on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 game, talking about that Preds lineup. There's a lot of reaction out there right now. 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 102.5 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. And listen to The Game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's The Game's 1K payday presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, noon, and 3. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com. Enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Mark Howard in for Robbie Stanley, who was glamping at the Grand Canyon, a word that I just learned this week, but apparently it's glamorous. Camping, Ryan Porth producing. We are talking Preds. And, guys, there's a lot of reaction out there. We had John Hines on earlier. And so what happens? You have an interview. I thought John Hines was great. I thought it was a really good interview, a lot of good stuff in there. One of the things that really struck me was what he said about Elli Tolvanen. Do we have that? I'd like to hear that again.
You know, I think he was he really got some traction there, and then he got hurt. And then since he's come back off his injury, I know he's working and trying. We're working with him. But, you know, he hasn't had the same impact as he's had 5-on-5 or on the power play. So, you know, I think it's the combination of the coaches trying to help the player, but, you know, it ultimately comes down to the player being able to play at a level that we feel he's going to be able to help us win. So, you know, that'll be a decision we'll have to make whether he's in or out.
So, making it clear, a tough decision, and frankly, I'm not surprised that Tolvanen would be a tough decision. We've talked about it all week. So I tweeted it out in my tweet because sometimes, you know, you can listen to an interview and then you take a little segment of it and it can go nuts and maybe it's a little bit out of context. But you guys tell me if my tweet's okay. Here's my tweet. Hines makes it clear Elli Tolvanen, quote, in or out of the lineup will be one of the tough decisions for him entering the Carolina series. Fair, accurate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And I'm sure as a sports fan you understand that when it comes to the playoffs, you've got to be in the moment. You can't get sentimental. You know, some of that plays in, obviously, what Tolvanen's done in the past. But you've got to figure out, and that's the great trick of coaching. And that was one of the things we were talking about with LaViolette in 2017. What we've seen with Hines this year is to understand for this very game on this very night, who are the best guys to put in there? What's the best lineup? And a lot goes into it. And a lot of it is gut feeling.
Yeah, and look, I understand the case for Tolvanen for sure. I mean, I think if it were me, I'd have him because of the power play. But there are other options, and there are different combinations, and depending on where DeShane goes, I think that could make it tougher. Here's some reactions. Seth Dean on Twitter. Coaches can revert back to the mean, too. Michael Gallagher, yes, Tolvanen hasn't really done much in 6 of the last 7 games, but it would be a big mistake sitting him in the biggest games of the season. Jeremy K. Gover, friend of the show, says, since returning, Tolvanen's been relatively quiet, but the power play, the very thing that prevented the Preds from winning the series in 2019 against Dallas, goes from dynamic to average at best without him in the lineup. It's on and on like that. He shouldn't overthink it. In's the obvious answer, said Todd M. Smashville's finest. Wait a minute. Tolvanen being in or out of the lineup is being discussed. There should be no question he's one of the 12 forwards. And there's a lot of good, you know, a lot of good gifs. I call them gifs. You can call them gifs if you like. You know, like Clint Eastwood looking stunned on his porch in that one movie that's not coming to mind right now. I got some WTFs on here. If he brings Tolvanen out of the lineup, he should be fired immediately. End of story. We're back to firing John Hines. Joe Lemming says, dude single-handedly gave this team life. He's not even a lock to be in. Hines is a clown face. My goodness. Twitter can be a nasty, nasty place. I think these are some overreactions, guys, because it's, again, I would choose Tolvanen in based on the power play, but there are other options. And if you love Duchesne, that's where I think it comes down to. If you love Duchesne and you really want to try Duchesne up there with Forsberg and Johansson, the line, the third line, again, this is all these discussions are presuming two lines aren't touched. We agree, right? I mean, they're not mess with the herd line for sure. And they're not going to me, Granlund, Yarncroak, Cunning, that's staying together. So your line then, if you do like Duchesne there and you feel like that's something that could really give you a boost, then your third line, I guess, is Halla, Arvidsson, if he's healthy, and Tolvanen. What do we think about that line? I think I'm just guessing that would be where pause really comes in for John Hines, because that line, I mean, it could be good. It's got some skill. You got Arvidsson's speed. You got Tolvanen's skill. Hall has played really well. But in this series, do you feel like need a little bit more physicality with every line?
Line combos are so fluid. What you start the game with isn't necessarily, you know, how you end the game. And that, again, goes into a coach's feel for his team and his players. But I don't think it's a no-brainer that Tolvanen plays. Now, I think at some point in the series, he's going to play, even if we don't see him in game one. But it's understandable why Hines would think this way, and he does have options.
Do you think he'll be tempted by putting Arvidsson back with Johansson and Forsberg and try to rekindle some of that Jofa magic?
Yeah, there's always that thought that you know this combination can do some great things. Now, can they do it in this series? I don't know.
I mean, they looked awfully good the last time they got reunited for the postseason. I mean, to me, that was by far the best thing about the very brief bubble appearance for the Preds last year, was that line, specifically Johansson, but that line looked good.
Yeah, and they need – I mean, everybody keeps talking about, you know, Tolvanen or Duchesne. Philip Forsberg's got to step up in this series.
Yeah.
For the Preds to win, I don't think they can do it without Forsberg. Carolina's got, you know, six highly skilled players, you know, up front. If the Preds, for instance, shut down Aho, that doesn't mean that Teravainen or one of the other guys is going to have a big series. Svechnikov, you know,
he's a
can
monster.
Explode too. So, but for the Predators, they need Philip Forsberg to have a big series.
Yeah, no doubt. There's some sure things that are also big storylines here.
Your big guns need to be your big guns in this series. And you listed, I think, four names, Mark. You could probably list another four.
Oh, yeah.
That they have. I mean, they have, what'd you say, about 8 to 10 top six level forwards? Aho's elite. And then you have a lot of fringe first
really
liners
good.
On
yeah,
other teams.
Really good. Well, yeah.
Niederreiter is really deep. A big guy in this
give
series.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me Niederreiter.
Yeah.
Nice.
Niederreiter's.
That's a big thing in Carolina, by the way.
Killed the Predators through the years.
Yes, he has. Especially when he was with
Minnesota,
yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're loaded. You're going to have a lot of people step up. I think, you know, I guess my question on Tolvanen would be, if he's not in the lineup, how much do you feel like you've diminished your power play?
Well, here's – and Hines won't say this, and the Predators won't say this. Tolvanen is a guy that I worry about in the playoffs, where things are more physical, where there's less room to operate. Those were all the things that held him back earlier in his career. And in the playoffs, it gets ramped up even more. Now, you can't operate with the mindset, well, he probably won't play well, but there are certain guys who don't seem to thrive in that situation. And I could see early in his career how Tolvanen might be one of those guys.
Well, no, I mean, that's totally fair. I feel like his compete level, physicality, all these things clearly have gotten better this year, right? I mean, he's made strides. He's figured out how to create space for himself a little bit more. I think you've seen some good things from him in areas of the game that aren't supposed to be his areas of the game. But let's say that's the case. Let's say he struggles in 5-on-5. He can't find any room. He's really not an asset for you. But you get a couple power play goals because so good there.
You're right. But, you know, I got, and I'm not making this comparison directly, but remember Mike Ribeiro. Mike Ribeiro, great during the regular season for the Predators, you know, for a year or so, but was absolutely invisible come playoff time because it got more physical and the spaces got a little tighter.
I can think of another center they've had in the last few years that had the same experience.
And then there's playoff Colin Wilson.
Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Turris, yeah.
And then, but Kyle Turris, though, but he wasn't having any success after it was like first 10 games.
20. Right? Don't sell him short.
20? Okay. We'll give him 20 games. But yeah, no playoff Colin Wilson. So they need, who is this team's playoff Colin Wilson?
Luke Kunin.
Playoff Luke Kunin?
Sure.
Okay. All right. We will take a break right now, and we will be back. Talk more Preds lineup. Get your reaction here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game.